everybody. I'm sorry for we've got a few minute delay here as we go through Technolandia, but we're here. Oh, I've got a really important show for you today, and you know how I feel about my beloved dolphins, whales, and all the living beings of the sea. So I just want to start by thanking you for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio show that by now you realize does more than dare you to think outside the box of convention. It implores you. It invites you vehemently to get out of that space and start soaring with the eagles. And if I have my way about it, by cracky, somewhere along the way we'll be soaring, we'll be sailing with the great whales and dolphins. And who better to talk about that burning passion that I have to help than someone I truly love and admire, Hardy Jones. I don't even think he realizes why I love him and adore him so much. But he's been on my show before. He is one of the first people to get out to Japan, to the island of Tauji, and risking his life, photograph what those, let's call them misguided people, are doing, killing, murdering, and slashing to death the great dolphin beings of our seas. Oh, Hardy, thank you for coming back on.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Oh, I wanted you to come back on because, as you know, I'm a real fan and admirer of what you're doing. And you've sent around recently another email that kind of got me wild, as you recall, by my response. I'd like to talk about what you're bringing forward today as far as the latest developments out there in the kingdoms of the whales and the dolphins, and the humans who don't seem to get this. So please tell us a little bit about what you're up to in these hours of trying to help these beings.
Well, there's a variety of things going on. The most recent one that we put in the Blue Voice newsletter was this potential renewal of commercial whaling. To give you a little background, which you may be familiar with, but not everybody is. In 1986, there was a moratorium voted by the International Whaling Commission on the commercial hunting of whales. Now, what happened following that is that Japan took a loophole in that law, the international law governing whaling, and they said that they were going to conduct scientific whaling. Completely bogus. What they did is they killed the whales, they measured them with a tape measure, and then they sold the meat just as they always had. So now what's happened is that there has been, over the past couple of years, negotiations going on between the United States and Britain, Japan, the major players in the International Whaling Commission, trying to find a way to keep this organization together, trying to find a compromise, actually, in a situation where there is no compromise. There is no compromise available on whether you're going to kill whales or not.
That's right. I mean, this is a no-brainer for anybody that's got a conscious mind.
Yeah, it's just you can't say there's any way of killing a few whales and having that be okay. But that's what they're trying to do, and they have come up with a scheme which would allow a small reduction in the number of whales taken, but it would legalize whaling. It would legalize Japan's whaling, and it would open the door to other nations to start whaling again. And so the potential for this compromise is pretty catastrophic for the whales at a time when sea life, and particularly the higher sea life, marine mammals such as whales and dolphins, they're very stressed by climate change and pollutants in the ocean. So this is the fight now, is to stop the legalization of whaling. The slogan that people in the movement are using is "Save the whales again."
But how is it possible? I mean, I'm sure that a lot of the people that are listening, and I assure you, a lot of my fans and friends are tuned into this program. don't know that this is even open for debate again. I mean, how is it possible that we are regressing back to legal, the possible, and from the way you sound, imminent legalization of more slaughter of whales? I just don't get this.
Well, it's, you know, the old phrase, the maintaining liberty is a constant battle, and the same is true on the environmental front. That we there are nations in the world that want to conduct whaling, and Japan is very, very adamant about doing it. They go around the world and they buy up little countries like these, the countries in the Caribbean, and they we were, my wife and partner Deborah and I were at the last whaling commission meeting in Madeira off the coast of Africa. And the Japanese were having lunch, and we happened into the same restaurant. And there were the Japanese entertaining the Mongolians, whom they had bought and paid for to bring to this meeting. You know, Mongolia doesn't even have a coast. So they are not really a nation that's very concerned with whales. And they also had Laos, which is another country that doesn't have a coast, but they brought them anyway. So they buy up votes from these countries, and that's what gives them the clout to bring this before this international commission.
But what is this commission, the International Whaling Commission? I mean, is this you know? Can you give us some insights into who is behind this, what's involved, and how the public can affect this?
Well, the IWC, as it's called, was begun after World War II, and the purpose of it was to kind of divvy up the world's whales for the hunting nations. And Holland was a whaling nation. The United States was a whaling nation until 1972. I actually, just to digress for a moment, when I was growing up as a young man, young boy, we raised dogs, collies, and we had sometimes up to 16 of them. And we used to go over and buy this canned dog food. And as I served it out, it was this very kind of slippery or shiny meat, and it looked kind of like bologna. And I said, I wonder what this is. Well, years later, I was in California, off of Richmond, you know, up in San Francisco Bay, and I learned that they had hunted whales out of San Francisco, and they had brought the whale in and cut it up and sold it as Alpo, as this dog food, and I realized, my Lord, I was feeding whale to my dogs when I was a kid. So
I realized that you were a child and didn't realize it, but the idea, first of all, that we still believe we are the most intelligent species on the planet is definitely challenged by the reality that human beings think it makes sense to kill majestic, beautiful whales, to chop it up, to chop up their beautiful bodies, to make dog food for guys that get perfectly happy to eat old spaghetti and breakfast.
Yeah.
I mean, hello? Are we still doing that? Are they still? What are the Japanese doing with this whale meat? We know that it's, you exposed on the last time you were on the show how toxic the whale and dolphin meat is. So why are they getting proverbial rocks off on eating the, or killing these whales? You mentioned that each whale is worth about $1 million, is that right?
I honestly can't remember what the statistic of what each whale is worth, but it's a losing proposition. It is a money losing operation that is supported by subsidies from the government. So it's a strange, peculiar thing that they continue to go whaling in the face of this international condemnation and the fact that they are actually losing money, that the take from last year is sitting in a freezer, you know, some massive freezers in Japan. They can't sell enough of it, but they continue to do it. They continue.
So is this some kind of male impotence testosterone demonstration or something?
No. I think it's a bit more complicated. The bureaucracy of Japan, one of the strongest agencies in Japan is the Japan Fisheries Agency, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Industry and Commerce, what in the United States would be very powerful agencies, analogous to the Department of Commerce and so forth. Many of these big ministries in Japan are totally against whaling and dolphin killing because they know what a dreadful image it portrays for Japan and the world. However, the Japan Fisheries Agency is so powerful, it's hard for us to understand that in the United States. But it's so powerful that they're able to override these other agencies and cause the whaling and dolphin hunting to continue. And they do that for a couple of reasons. One of them is very simply the bureaucratic inertia that, well, we preside over the business of whaling. We preside over that. And if we give it away, then our ministry will have that much less to do. So,
can't they go attack some other kind of living form that isn't in extinction?
Well, they don't want to give up any, they don't want to appear to give up any right to do anything that they want in the oceans. They have very few natural resources themselves, Japan does. So a vast amount of their protein comes from the sea, and they don't want to say, okay, well, all right, we're going to give up whaling. They don't want to cede any of their so-called rights. And I think we've got another problem, too, which maybe is somewhat counterintuitive, but you have the situation of Paul Watson and the sea shepherds down in the Antarctic, and they are
making... About that.
Yeah, they're making life very difficult for those guys to go whaling. But at the same time...
Excuse me for interrupting you, Hardy, but the Japanese just rammed... What, did they lose two ships, the Sea Shepherds? I thought they were out of business almost.
They sunk one of the ships, as far as I know. They sunk one of the ships, and they damaged the Bob Barker. But it's kind of hard to tell what's happening down there. You can look at the film, and you can't really tell who collided with whom.
Yeah.
The sea shepherds are very aggressive in the way they go in there, and they just put somebody on board the Japanese, one of the Japanese vessels, at night, and he was going to go up and arrest the captain for attempted murder. And it's a publicity game that they're all playing. And the thing that you have to consider is that the more you openly press the Japanese to stop whaling, the less likely they are to do it.
What is this, a male macho testosterone thing?
Testosterone.
Yeah, it seems to be a mixture of a cultural testosterone overdose of suppressed macho instincts. I just can't stand it. I get so outrageously upset about it.
Well, no nation can concede that a group like the Sea Shepherds is going to run them out of the ocean. They just can't do it. So, Japan can't just say we're going to quit whaling because these guys have made it too difficult for us. No sovereign nation will do that. So, in a way, all of this activity and focus, the more publicity that is brought onto Japan, in a sense, makes it more difficult for them to give it up. I'll tell you what I think may happen, which is somewhat hopeful.
Please do enlighten us and give us some good news, because it's so dark.
Well, the United Nations is voting this year on a set of regulations that would govern the entry of ships into the Antarctic Oceans, the so-called Southern Ocean. And in order to go in there, a ship would have to be double-hulled and have a number of other safety features that would make it it would make it much safer operating in those very in that fragile ecosystem. Now, the Japanese, in order to go whaling in the Antarctic, they have to have a factory ship called the Nissan Maru, and that massive ship, which is I've been on it, and it looks like an aircraft carrier, would not pass muster. So they could not bring the Nissan Maru into the Antarctic area if these regulations pass, and it looks like they will. The Nissan Maru has twice had very serious accidents, once on the way to the Antarctic and once in the Antarctic, where their fires broke out on the ship. And if that ship had really gone up and had broken apart and spilled all of its oil into the Antarctic, it would have been an ecological catastrophe. So that's really, you know, sometimes things work out in ways that are unpredictable. And everybody's pushing, and, you know, this fight to save the whales has gone on now since at least the later part of the 1970s. And it may be that it's going to end up being the United Nations maritime regulations that bring an end to it in the Antarctic.
And right, but won't they just shift their efforts to other rich seas around the world where they can take, as they love that word, more of the whales from other
What they're trying to do is to get a legalized coastal whaling. In other words, they want to be able to whale off the coast of Japan and in the waters north of Japan. So, one, they don't have to run all the way down to the Antarctic, which is very expensive in terms of fuel. And secondly, it would get them around the UN regulations on the Antarctic. So that's the battle that's coming up. Now, there's a meeting in St. Petersburg, Florida, that begins on March the 2nd, and Blue Voice will be down there with fact sheets and video. And, of course, we take the position that these whales just shouldn't be hunted under any circumstances for intrinsic reasons. So we'll have some beautiful videos of humpback whales being very friendly to people, beautiful stuff that I shot down in French Polynesia of mating whales and whale calves and that kind of thing, trying to show what the, you know, who this is that is being considered for slaughter.
And let me ask you a question about this. When you talk about the Whaling Commission and these conferences, who are the people that are allowed to go to these conferences? Can normal people go, or do you have to be a kahuna in the government, or like you, somebody who represents an organization?
Yeah, you do have to either be a delegate, and the delegates are selected, each nation selects its delegation, or you can be an NGO, a non-governmental organization, and if you're approved, you register. And it costs about $1,000 just to register. But Blue Voice is a recognized non-governmental organization at the IWC, so we pay our $1,000, and we can then send two representatives and a translator. And, you know, we can be effective on the floor, talking to people, lobbying people, putting out fact sheets. We tweet and we blog from the scene, and we can mobilize our membership. We have right now about 10,000 active members, and anybody can become a member just by going to our website and signing up, and then we send them action alerts.
Okay, so hold on, because I want to make a little request here. This I don't think I even announced that Harvey was the founder of BlueVoice.org at the beginning of the show. So for those of you who are tuning in, I'm talking with a spirit warrior for the whales and the dolphins. His name is Hardy Jones. His organization is bluevoice.org. He needs your help. I donate as best I can to him. He needs lots of people reaching into their pocket so that $1,000 to go down to these conventions isn't a gripping obstruction, so that people like him can get in there and try to balance out the Japanese and the other killers of whales and dolphins and sea beings. So could you please give up your coffee. I'm going to be asking you to do this more and more when I get my foundation going. Could you give up that Starbucks coffee a week and help Hardy and people like him? But at the moment, let's help Hardy at bluevoice.org. Any donation. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people coughing up $5 a week can make a big, big difference. Can you help? You know, we're all hung up about bucks these days, but for God's sakes, here are the spirit warriors that are out there fighting for the cause. Please reach into your pocket at the end of the show, because now you don't want to miss Hardy, and send this man $5 or 10 or 20, whatever you can afford, so that we have people like him fighting for beings like them. Dig it? That's my spiel. Please hear it. All right, before we get Hardy back on, I'm going to open up the show in a minute for call-ins. So please get your pens out. This is a rare occasion to talk to Hardy directly. I have the honor of doing it occasionally, but now you're going to have the chance to speak to him and get it from the proverbial, hate to say horse's mouth, but the human's mouth on dolphin and whale issues. Is the number to call in on toll-free for the U.S. and Canada is 888-815-9756. I'll do that again. 888-815-9756. And I do want to say that Hardy didn't come up on the show today just for a fundraising. That is my initiative. I want this man to have support. So I need your help, and he needs your help, and the whales and the dolphin beings, by God, need our help more than ever before. Consider, they are actually going to try to push back through whaling, open whaling on the seas of this planet. All right, Hardy, let's get back to what we were talking about. You were about to say something, and I interrupted you.
Well, one thing that I'd like to mention is that the issues around whales and dolphins have grown more complex over the years, as we've learned of the levels of contamination in dolphins and whales. We've learned what we're doing to the seas in terms of dumping toxic material into them. And that is, you know, we're not now just fighting for the whales and dolphins. We're fighting for clean oceans and for food supplies, the greatest source of protein that's ever been, is now being contaminated and over-exploited. So when we look at this, it's not just the whales and dolphins we're helping, it's ourselves. And,
that's right.
There are reports, I'm talking to you from northeast Florida. We live in St. Augustine, which is the oldest inhabited town in the United States. And we've just, in the last 2 days, gotten some incredibly alarming reports about contamination in dolphins off this southeastern United States coast. Levels of PCBs in dolphins in Georgia, which they just claim are the highest levels of contaminants ever found in any marine mammal.
And but the Japanese still want to eat that meat.
The Japanese are still, that's one of the prime arguments that we're using to stop it. But they continue, despite the fact that this dolphin meat that they're eating is tenfold, twentyfold, fiftyfold times the mercury level that's allowed by Japanese law, they continue to hunt the dolphins and sell the meat.
So,
it's kind of like smoking.
We're such a self-extinguishing society, you know.
Well, you know, look at smoking. Smoking is declining in a lot of places, but, you know, if we knew for years, decades, that smoking was harmful to people's health, and it's very hard to get them to back off and give up smoking.
Right. So, well, there's a case for government intervention, because we've got the governments of the world finally blocking people from smoking public places, and the smoking's going down. So can't we use that metaphor for what can be done to convince the Japanese that they should stop eating the dolphins?
Well, I think that it may be a way for them to, I don't know. I can't claim to be an expert on the psychology of the Japanese. But it may be that the way to for them to back gracefully out of this predicament and stop the dolphin hunting is for them to say it's a health hazard.
Exactly.
You're familiar with the Faroe Islands, where they for mm-hmm. many, many centuries had this terrible hunt on pilot whales up there. And the government health authorities came out and they said to people, look, there's too much mercury in these pilot whales for you to eat. And we've discovered that the Faroe Islands have a very high level of Parkinson's disease. And then they went back and checked and found that those people had high levels of mercury. So,
but they're still doing the dolphin slaughter in the bay. We've been seeing those pictures going around on the net.
Let me tell you something about that. They actually have quit doing that, and that this it's paradoxical, but we probably every 3 days receive something that's called Denmark shame. It's probably what you're talking about. The Faroese have actually given up that hunt or have largely stopped hunting, and that happened about 2.5 or 3 years ago, and there was
good news.
Yeah, it's very, very good news, and it's in part came because the health authorities came out and said, don't eat the meat, so, you know, the people stopped buying it.
You mean, but what about just the sheer fun they were having as their rites of passage as young bucks? That fun passed?
Yes, that's something that was definitely a part of it, but they do seem to have largely given that up. And so what I'm fascinated by is the fact that this message about Denmark shame has gone around the world countless times, and it's actually out of date, the pictures that were taken on it. And I'm happy to have a chance on your show to let people know about that. The pictures that were shown on that email were many, many years old and not at all current. So it's a good piece of news that they have largely quit doing that in the Faroes.
It's a huge piece of news, Hardy, and I would like to ask you, as the founder and the director of BlueVoice.org, can you get a statement from the government, or is there some way you can supply the countless people who need some good news on this front with a statement that is showing that that is a situation that is improving or is gone? Oh, my God. How glad am I to hear that?
Yeah, well, what we do is we'll take something like the report on the elevated levels of Parkinson's disease in the Faroes from eating pilot whale. And mm-hmm. then we translate that into Japanese, and we give that to the Japanese media, and we bring it to Japan. And when we walk around this village of Taiji, where, as you said earlier, they still conduct the hunt, we walk around and we pass these things out to people, these little fact sheets, written in Japanese, saying that the Danish government, the Faroese government, has said that has proven that it's unhealthful to eat pilot whale meat, and that's largely what they kill in Taiji, is pilot whale. So we're saying to them, you know, you guys, for your own health, just stop eating this stuff. And I'm happy to say another piece of good news is that the demand for dolphin and pilot whale meat in Taiji has fallen very dramatically. So
that's another good piece of good news. This is two good newses in the midst of a bunch of bad news. I'm really glad that you're on today. Thank you for that.
Yes, well, you know, it is... When people get together and they get working and they get organized, we can make a change. And
a whole great spirit to that. And I wanted to say that when you were talking about the they're not killing as many because of the messages from the government, I feel very strongly that the huge human outcry that we have done and the letters and protests that we have done to the government there certainly must have had a big effect.
Yes, outside protests do have an impact, and this is in a way tragically ironic, but The thing that is causing the decline in demand for dolphin meat is the fact that it's being shown, and people are finally seeing it in the newspapers and on TV. It's being shown that the animals are so toxic that it's unhealthy to eat. So we have to go another step beyond saving whales and dolphins, and we have to reverse the pollution of this, of our oceans and the vast food supply that they represent. It's what Blue Voice is focusing on, both of those issues, because they come together in the sense that by proving the toxicity of the dolphin meat, we, one, show the level of toxins in the oceans, but we also have a great and very strong argument against killing them, killing the dolphins.
Right, so it's kind of a double-edged sword in a way, because if we do manage to improve the oceans and the ban is off of the toxicity of the meat, there'll be more dolphin taking anyway. So, boy, we got our tasks cut out for us. Improving the oceans and improving the mindset of people that just because they're less toxic doesn't mean you need to kill them. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, we view the dolphins as the equivalent of human beings in terms of their sentience, their intelligence, their brain size. They're every bit as much as we are, and so they ought to be protected just because they're so great. They're wonderful, and you know, the debate can go, you know, where do you stop? It's a long discussion of you know, the Japanese always say to us, well, you eat cattle. And yes, we do. That's another argument for me. It's a epistemological argument that, you know, can go on all night. And
Well, I'm a vegetarian, and a lot of my listeners are too, but I'm not a preacher and about that, and everyone is free to make their own personal decision. But it's very different when you talk about beings that are being tortured and facing extinction. And that is the case with the whales and the dolphins.
And I make a distinction with dolphins because they are very large-brained. They're very intelligent. There's a wonderful thing that I think you'll be interested in, and your listeners will be interested to know. There's a Dr. Lori Marino at Emory University in Atlanta has done work which, you know, for me, you don't have to prove dolphins are intelligent because I swim with them out in the open sea and I've seen them, how they interact and how they are, and don't doubt their intelligence. But because she's a scientist and she wants to speak to the scientific world, Dr. Marino has proven using mirrors that dolphins are self-aware.
Yes.
And you're probably familiar with that work. Well, she is this weekend out addressing the Association of Aquariums in San Diego, and she's giving them this talk on how dolphins simply are too intelligent and too subject to psychological pain to put them in these tanks and have them be treated as circus animals. So she's getting the word out to an audience that really needs to hear that.
Yeah, we have seen that some information coming through our channels on the net, but I would like to know, what can we do to help support her?
I think that the thing that if you're talking about just the captivity issue, people have to come to understand the captivity issue, and they have to be willing to do the same thing we do on all other issues. They have to be willing to, when laws are being enacted, they have to get to their representatives and Congress people and senators and let them know that captivity of dolphins is unacceptable. There are certain states and in the United States, I believe South Carolina has outlawed it, and the advanced aquariums like Monterey Bay don't keep dolphins in captivity. So there's a movement to end captivity for dolphins, but it's a tough fight because dolphins are so attractive and so popular that they're being snatched. One of the biggest sources of them is Taiji, where they, every time they round up a bunch of dolphins, they take 15 or 20 of them for captivity. And we have an ally in Turkey who just reported to us that 5 of the 11 dolphins that had come from Taiji to Turkey just died.
Really?
And yeah, all of a sudden, so they either got into some toxic water or they got some toxic fish. But
oh my God,
that's another area to make ourselves aware of, that these animals are not, even though it looks like they're having fun in those tanks, and dolphins have that perpetual smile, they're not enjoying themselves. And if people knew the process whereby they were captured and then shipped in airplanes halfway around the world, I think they'd have more of an understanding of why it's not a good idea to support marine parks. I mean, one thing people can do is simply not patronize them.
That's right. That is a biggie. I'm doing a lot to help awaken people to stop patronizing circuses because of the cruelty of the animals that they're, especially the elephants, and we can certainly apply that to the marine parks. Parks for human fun. Be interesting if a bunch of aliens decided to open a human park and we had to jump through hoops for their entertainment, wouldn't it?
Well, I've got a few candidates that I'd like to...
Listen, I've got a question coming in here on my on the web that says, can you give us some details of what your organization is doing now, specific things that your organization is involved with? This is for Alan.
Yeah, well, one of the things we're doing is we're getting prepped to go to the International Whaling Commission meeting in St. Petersburg and present a case that legalized whaling should not be allowed to resume. Now, the other thing that's going on at this meeting is that they're going to decide whether they're going to allow Greenland to hunt 50 humpback whales.
Oh, yeah, we're still on that, right?
Yes, that's still on the... it just keeps getting pushed down the road, and this may be the meeting where they finally come up with a decision on it. So we took flyers and put them on whale watch boats off the coast of New England all of last fall, and we got thousands of people who were writing into the Obama administration saying, please protect the whales. Do not,
yes, we
would
say that too.
Yeah, do not allow the Greenlanders to hunt humpbacks. That's a travesty to hunt those. It's a travesty to hunt any whale, but the humpbacks being the most gorgeous song-singing, with their beautiful white wings. It's just...
playful, joyous.
Unacceptable.
Masters.
So we're doing that, and then we're publishing it's getting to be a very large volume now called Our Shared Fate. And it's a compendium of all of the information on toxics in marine mammals and the effect in human beings on health. That's to say, if you have dolphins, say, off the coast of Georgia that have these extreme levels of pollutants such as PCBs, we're doing research on what the health status is of the people who eat the same fish as the dolphins. And we're finding correlations to certain cancers and other diseases such as Parkinson's disease and heart disease. So, and then we are still campaigning at Taiji to stop the slaughter there, and we're mainly doing that through this issue of contamination. We test dolphins and we test people for levels of mercury and other pollutants, and that word is getting out now that maybe this is not such a good thing to have for our dinner.
Right. I've got another question that's come in and says, well, it says, thank you for making The Cove. It has awakened a lot of people, but that is not your film, is it?
No, I did not make The Cove. I was in it, I appear in it, and I did a film called When Dolphins Cry.
Oh, that was the one I saw. That's how I got introduced to you.
Uh-huh. Well, that was done for National Geographic, and when a certain individual saw When Dolphins Cry, he got in touch with a very, very wealthy guy, one of the guys who started Netscape, and they put together, I did my film for $65,000, and it appeared on all over the world on the National Geographic distribution network. But the people who made The Cove, which is nominated for an Academy Award, had a budget well into the millions, and they were able to do a fascinating story and then do a lot of follow-up on it. So they covered really the same ground that I had covered in my film earlier, but they did it in a... I think that the really effective thing about The Cove has not just been the movie, but the follow-through of it. And if they win an Academy Award, this will be seen all over Japan. So
I didn't realize that this movie was up for an Academy Award. Is it a Best Documentary category?
Yes.
Oh, well, let's hope. It certainly sounds like it has the reach to have that visibility at the Oscars.
Yeah, that will be something very big, because the Japanese all watch the Oscars, and I think they're going to be stunned when the vast majority of people in Japan don't know that this dolphin slaughter takes place. They do know about the whaling, but they don't know about the dolphin slaughter, and I think this is going to come as a big shock to them, because when they do the presentation of each category, they show little film clips for each of the nominated films. So even if they don't win, they're still going to get on the air, and they're still going to reach Japan and other places.
Great. Okay, I've got one more question coming in here. My name is Marianne. I want to know how I can support you. How I can support your organization for this event?
How I can support the organization? What was the last part?
For this event, this upcoming event, how to support you, your work there.
You mean, I guess she must mean at the International Whaling Commission meeting.
Yes.
Well, the first thing to do would be to go to www.bluevoice.org, and on the home page to sign up for our newsletter. If you signed up for our newsletter, you'll get a whole bunch of interesting information about dolphins, research, intelligence, new discoveries, but you'll also get action alerts that'll say, okay, it's critical at this moment, right now, within the next 2 or 3 hours, please send this email to President Obama or the head of National Marine Fisheries Service or somebody who's critical related to a vote that's just about to come up. So,
and do you usually, when you do that call, I know we've done some in the past, you always provide the email addresses for people, because let's face it, people are a little bit lazy sometimes. Is that right?
Well, we give the email addresses to which they should send, and what we used to put out a blanket thing, you just click here and it goes through, and then we discovered that those get filtered,
right.
And there's a calculus for how much each kind of email, faxed, letter amounts to, and if it's a mass, click here and it goes off, it's very discounted. Whereas if it's an individual letter that comes, an individual email that comes from the person's home email address, it counts for much, much more. So we generally suggest some text. Say, you can copy and paste this and add your own words, and then send it to this email address. That we think is the most effective.
Okay. Now, Hardy, a question. We seem to, last time I had you on, I asked you this question, and I don't want to say you dodged it, but you seem to not really be very open to it or unfamiliar with it, however you want to call it, and that is the sonic tests that are being planned by the Navy for the next 5 years, where they're planning to do some serioso, big-time, hypersonic Navy, extremely low frequency sonic boom programs in the oceans, and another program where they're going to be dumping white phosphorus and other chemicals in the ocean. What do you know about that, and how do you feel about it?
As far as the sonic issue, it's very serious, but it's an area that we haven't, that Blue Voice hasn't focused on. If an organization has to have certain specific achievable goals, and we are working on the ones that we think we can do the most for. Obviously, the sonic issue is very important, and right off of Jacksonville, they're trying, in Northeast Florida, they're trying to establish a naval weapons range, which would have all sorts of stuff exploding out there in areas that are very frequented by dolphins and are the winter calving grounds of the right whale, the northern right whale, which is, you know, there's only 300 or so of them left. And so they want to do this military business right in the area where the whales are breeding and calving. And
are they terrorists?
Are what? Who, the whales? I think the I'm not going to say that. I have my own idea about who terrorists are, but they're certainly not the whales. And
they're not. But that's the excuse that we get, isn't it? That we're protecting our shores against terrorists.
Yeah, and some kind of a military menace. That I don't discount the fact that there are nations which mean us harm. I just think that you've got to say there are certain things that are sacrosanct, certain things we're not going to do. You wouldn't set off a weapon in, let's say, a park or a children's playground, and you shouldn't set it off in the area where one of the most endangered species on Earth is reproducing. We can see, it's actually a wonderful thing. We can go down to the beach here at St. Augustine and look offshore, and at this time of year, during the December through April period, we can see the right whales out just offshore by maybe a quarter of a mile, and their tails are flying in the air, and I think they're in a process of mating, and that they're very acrobatic, and absolutely, it's absolutely inspiring to see that. And, you know, to me, anything that puts that in danger is really unacceptable.
I know. As you know, I just came back from Cabo San Lucas and Magdalena Bay and spent time with these beautiful beings. And I just, to think that the human race is going to sit quietly back and allow the Navy to start bombing and just tearing the brains out of all these beings in the name of fighting terrorism is just more than I can bear.
Yeah,
do you think we can stop this, Harvey?
It can be stopped. I don't know if it will be, but it can be stopped. As a matter of fact, a guy I know very well here in St. Augustine, he runs an eco tour business, and we go out with him frequently. We see dolphins all the time right here, right in St. Augustine. He is a litigant in the, or a plaintiff in a suit that would prohibit the Navy from discharging these weapons in this particular coastal area.
So that's people are fighting.
Yeah, he is, and people can fight back, but people have to be motivated to fight back. They have to know that we can win these battles, and we can, and they have to set a priority and say, I'm going to devote some of my time, my money, my energy, my intellect to fighting these critical battles that are so important for what's going to survive on our planet.
I always tell people, you don't have to be a brazen warrior like some of us are, but neither can you sit back and say, what a mess the world is, so depressed, and do nothing, and take no responsibility in making changes. So with that said, I am already almost at the hour of closure. Talking to Harvey Jones is... so quickly the time goes by, and I could talk to him all day. But I am glad to see that we've got some hopeful news coming out. And now it's up to you people that are listening to get off of your assets, as you know I affectionately call it, and help Hardy. Let's find out about this man and his suit. Let's send letters. Send letters to your representatives. We have got to stop those bases out in the ocean, even if it means, I don't know what, enough human beings screaming loud enough can make a change in this world. And here we are, a little group on this little radio station, trying to connect with people all over the planet that are dedicating their lives at the risk of really physically losing their lives to save these beautiful creatures, to save the oceans, to save this planet, the Garden of Eden. Hardy, have you got a last message to give people before we sign out?
Well, you know, there's one of my favorite quotes is from Edmund Burke, who was a political philosopher a couple hundred years ago, and he said, all that is required for the triumph of evil in the world is for enough good people to do nothing.
Oh, wow. I love that. I will leave all of you with that thought. Thank you, Hardy. Thank you all for tuning in. Let me see you send in some help to Hardy Jones and thebluevoice.org for all the good work they're doing. Thanks again. I love you, Hardy. I will always be behind you and celebrate the work that you do.
Thank you, Pat. It's been such a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, too. Okay, everybody, I got to run. This is Beyond the Matrix, signing out until next week. I love you. Thanks to my Facebook friends. I know you're there. I know you're caring. Please take action. Action is the word. I love you. I'm with you. Aho, great spirit. To the whales and the dolphin beings, this is Patricia Corey signing out.